Chapter 4 Lexi spent the rest of the day at the Cup and Cake. Her bakery was on Brook Ridge Falls Main Street, overlooking the waterfall the town was named for. She was happiest when she was in the kitchen, baking. Except, maybe, when she could be looking into a mysterious murder. But she had a business to run, so she experimented with a scone recipe, adding a little more sugar to the tops, more orange zest to the cranberry orange recipe, and she even came up with a chocolate scone to add to her offerings. It was a slow afternoon and not many customers came, so when 5 o'clock rolled around, she already had the cafe tables by the windows cleaned, the self-serve coffee station emptied and ready for tomorrow's brew, and the glass cases that displayed her pastries scrubbed free of fingerprints. She drove home, wondering if Jack had received any calls about Olive Pendleton. Maybe Olive's husband had needed time to stage the body to incriminate someone else before calling the police. If he had, would Jack have texted her? Jack was already there when she got to the old craftsman-style bungalow she'd bought when Nance had moved into the retirement community. The home held a lot of warm memories from her childhood, and now she and Jack were making even more memories there. Woof! A ball of white fur hurled itself across the living room into Lexi's arms. A warm tongue lapped at her face. Okay, Sprinkles, okay. Lexi put the dog down and stroked her silky fur. She was rewarded with a happy gaze of adoration from the dog's brown eyes that warmed her heart. I guess someone's happy to see me. That makes two of us. Jack had come in from the kitchen and was standing next to her. Lexi gazed up into his brown eyes, and her stomach fluttered as he opened his arms. They'd been married for a couple of years now, but her heart still beat a little faster when she was near him. She eagerly slipped into his embrace and accepted his kiss. She'd been half worried he might be mad about her visit to the police station, but his kiss told her he wasn't holding any grudges.
I put some steaks on the grill and was just making a salad.
Jack gestured toward the kitchen. Lexi tossed her purse onto the couch and followed Jack into the kitchen, with Sprinkles trotting at her heels. Lexi had kept the kitchen pretty much the same as it had been when Nance owned the house. Black and white linoleum floor and crisp white painted cabinets. A pile of grape tomatoes sat on a cutting board on the counter. Lexi pushed Jack toward the back door. She appreciated that he started supper when he got home first, but didn't think he needed to do all the work. I'll finish the salad. You check the steaks. The mouth-watering smell of grilled meat wafted in through the back door as Jack opened it. Lexi focused on slicing the small tomatoes in half, popping a few of them into her mouth. They were no substitute for Jack's perfectly seared steaks. He came back in, slipped an arm around her waist, and nuzzled her neck.
They're almost done. How's the salad coming?
Pretty much done. She nestled into his embrace just as Sprinkles trotted in with a stuffed penguin in her mouth. She pushed in between Lexi and Jack, oblivious to the fact that she was intruding on their moment. When Lexi didn't respond, the dog jumped on her leg.
Do you have a new toy?
Lexi looked up at Jack, who nodded.
I had some extra time after work, and her old one was falling apart, he said.
Lexi crouched and tugged on one end of the toy. Sprinkles tugged back and let out a friendly growl. Lexi tugged harder. Sprinkles let go, and Lexi tossed the toy across the kitchen. Sprinkles scrambled across the linoleum, her claws sliding on the slick surface as she skidded over to retrieve the toy and bring it back to Lexi. Lexi tossed it again, and Sprinkles went through the same routine, except this time, instead of bringing the toy back, she trotted off to the living room with it in her mouth.
Looks like she won't even bring a new toy back more than once.
No matter how many times Lexi had tried, she could not get Sprinkles to fetch more than once. Instead, she'd run off and hide the toy.
Lexi thought about the Pendletons' peekapoos. Did they run off and hide their toys, even if one of them was a drone? Lexi peered out into the living room to see Sprinkles shoving the toy under the couch, one of her favorite hiding spots. Lexi turned her attention back to Jack, who was gathering a handful of plates, utensils, and condiments so they could eat outside. "You never got a call about Olive Pendleton?" Lexi asked as she covered the salad bowl and followed him out to the patio.
"Nope. Weird, huh?"
"Very." Lexi chewed her bottom lip, wondering if Jack would say any more about it. Should she ask? Usually, it was best to wait him out. The steaks let out one last sizzle as Jack speared them with a large fork and moved them from the grill to a platter. He set the platter on the table, and they got busy loading up their plates and eating. After a few bites, Jack finally said,
"I did do a little bit of research, though."
Lexi's brows shot up.
"Oh, really? So you do believe us?"
"Of course I believe you. I waited all day for a call to come in, but nothing ever came. I'm limited as to what I can do, officially."
Jack swallowed a piece of steak and washed it down with some red wine.
"I assume you guys did some investigating after you left my office."
"You know how Nance is. But we didn't do anything bad, we just went over to the Pendletons. Naturally, the body was no longer there. And when we knocked on the door, the husband said Olive was napping."
"Maybe the fall wasn't as bad as you thought?"
Jack suggested.
"Helen said the video was a little hard to see. Maybe she did fall, but didn't need medical attention."
"No way. She fell four stories, and there was blood. Lots of it." Lexi shivered and pushed her food away, remembering the sight of Olive Pendleton smashed on the cement slab. "What I don't get is why. I mean, I could see him clubbing her on the head so she'd fall, and then he could say it was an accident. The part I don't get is the husband pretending she's still alive." Jack shrugged.
"Maybe he's not the killer. Maybe whoever the killer is lives in that house or has access to it and told the husband Olive was sleeping."
"And he didn't notice? Why would the killer want to hide the body? And what did they do with it?"
Jack leaned back and sipped his wine. "Good questions. I don't know the answers. I can see something fishy is going on, but I can't investigate officially. However, I did manage to dig up something that might help you."
Lexi felt a surge of excitement. "Really? What?"
"Well, I don't know if I should tell you. Maybe we could barter for it?"
Jack said suggestively. Lexi's lips curled in a smile. She leaned across, accepting the hand he held out to her. "I'm up for a little bartering."
"Okay. This may not be anything, but I had Wendy do a little research in her downtime. We didn't have anything in the police database, but she did run across a strange court case in which Olive tried to sue her parents about changes in their will."
Lexi's brows drew together. "Can you do that?"
"Nope. It was thrown out, but the record is still there."
"So, what happened?"
"It seems her family, her maiden name was McMurdy, was wealthy, but they didn't approve of Olive's career choice or of her husband, Rupert,"
Jack said. Picturing Rupert with his stained pants and scowl, Lexi could see why. "They didn't like that she was an author?"
"Nope. They were afraid she'd die a starving artist. And they said Rupert would spend the money like it was burning a hole in his pocket."
"But she's successful and has a big house." Lexi's voice drifted off as she pictured the peeling paint and unkempt lawn. Was Olive broke or just eccentric?
"They died about 10 years ago, probably before her books became famous. Anyway, they had a codicil in the will that prohibited Rupert from getting any of the McMurdy money. Olive made quite a ruckus about it when her mom told her. There was a domestic call about that, and Olive had to be taken into custody. Sounds like she had a bit of a temper.
So, if Olive died, Rupert wouldn't get anything she'd inherited from her parents.
That wasn't a very good reason to kill her.
But it was a good reason to pretend she was still alive. Except, Olive was a famous author, so she probably had plenty of her own money that Rupert would inherit. It didn't make sense for him to take such a big chance on killing her, and then pretend she was alive just to get her parents' money. How much did she inherit?
I don't know. I know she has a sister, and they split the money, but it was almost a decade ago. For all I know, she already spent it. Ruth might be able to work her magic online and find out.
Still doesn't make much sense. If she inherited a decade ago, why would Rupert wait until now to kill her? And if she had money, why was their house in such disrepair?
I don't know about the money, but according to what Wendy said, Olive had all her books in a literary trust, and her parents made a big stink about that, too.
Stink?
Yep. They must have really hated Rupert, because they put a codicil in their will that would make her sister sole trustee of the McMurdy Family Trust if Olive named Rupert as beneficiary to her literary trust. That means her sister would control all the McMurdy family money.
Huh. So, what did she do?
She listed her dogs as the beneficiaries of her trust.
Her dogs? So that means if Olive died, Rupert wouldn't get any of the money from her books. Jack nodded.
That's right.
Well. That sounds like a motive to kill her and pretend she was still alive to me.